Okay, good morning, everyone. I'll try not to speak in French despite my last name, because you wouldn't understand anything. And my German is worse, but I can speak in Spanish if you'd like. I'd like to talk today about the onward to the next SIFS client, but I think I need to enable the display. And that looks visible. I work in IBM's Linux Technology Center, and I'm also the chair of the work group within the Storage Network Industry Association, SNIA, that works on CIFS. We're the group that published the reference documentation for CIFS, and we're also working with SPEC on benchmark extensions for CIFS and some other very interesting projects. I'd like to talk today about the Linux SIFS client, because that's code that I own and maintain, and what IBM pays me part of the time to donate back to the community. I'd also like to talk about protocol extensions, some of the things that Jeremy and I have discussed, the people from Apple and some other companies have discussed, to improve the ability for Samba to be an optimal server for some client types, especially for Unix-like clients. Before I dive into the CIFS VFS, I wanted to mention a little bit about Linux 2.6. For those of you who aren't familiar, there have been many improvements in Linux 2.6, and I think many of you have seen some of the benchmark articles that have shown 2.4 versus 2.6 file system improvements for Samba. There was a cover story of one of the major info magazines that showed some spectacular improvements. But what about the client? You know, SMB client is fantastic for certain tasks, but you can't mount using SMB client. And SMBFS was showing its age. They were the maintainer was doing some work, but it needed a rewrite from top to bottom for certain things like signing, and it needed a much better POSIX file semantics. So a few years ago, I started the SysVFS after one of the SNIA SIFS conferences, wrote it from scratch, and included it in 2.6. There are a couple Samba files that are ported for encryption purposes, the DES encryption, for example, but the rest is written from scratch. Linux 2.6 adds other file systems. It adds AFS support. It adds support for NFS version 4, which I think is very interesting to many of you here. It adds many file system improvements, lookup intents, which improves the file create semantics, makes file create more atomic. It handles multi-page read-ahead and write-behind, which is one of the main reasons that you see some of the caching and performance improvements. It handles network file system mounts better, and there's a number of subtle functional features that have improved. The locking is improved. Nanosecond file timestamps mean that you can now get much more accurate inode times, which is useful for some applications. And it helps SIFS, because SIFS has we were rounding the time down to from 100 nanoseconds down to seconds. But why SIFS? Why should we care about SIFS? A lot of people view the recent standardization last year of NFS version 4. For those of you, living in a cave, NFS version 4 is now the official file system standard. And it has many SIFS-like features. The NFS version 4 spec writers obviously looked carefully at SIFS, and things like the ACL model and some of the pieces are directly from SIFS. But, SIFS is a much richer protocol. It includes the kitchen sink. It includes everything. Its caching approach is also a nice compromise. AFS was a very heavyweight caching implementation, and there are cases in which that's much slower than the lightweight approach that SIFS took. And there are some platforms that NFS doesn't map well to. NFS has more layering. It's embedded within an RPC layer. It also does some unfortunate things. Even in the NFS version 4 implementation, some of the stateless assumptions shine through. And some of the operations don't map well to Windows, even now. And, of course, the largest install base is installed on, you know, these Windows clients, right? So OS2, DOS, Windows, of all versions, Macintosh, these all ship SIFS clients. And, you know, that's why we're here. We're here for Samba, right? So what we're seeing is that we needed improved Linux client to have synergy with Samba. And I'd like to go briefly discuss the state of the Linux SIFS client. It's approaching stability that I think is reasonable enough for enterprise use. Over, I think, the next month or two, I'll feel a lot more confident about that as it's included in some of the distributions that are coming out. We've been doing stress testing of it on some high-end multiprocessor hardware recently and shaking out some read-ahead bugs and shaking out a few functional minor functional problems. But there are sort of overwhelming advantages it has over SMBFS in POSIX file semantics. It has much better support for distributed caching. There isn't distributed caching in SMBFS. It's just caching on a timer. And even the NFS version 4 client caches on a timer. OpLock is implemented in SIFS. It has support for packet signing, for better internationalization, Unicode. Obviously, it handles Windows 2003 interoperability, which often requires signing to be enabled. And there are a lot of much smaller features that I'll detail in a few minutes. Currently in 2.6, the version is 0.94. There's also a version available for 2.4 Linux that currently doesn't get heavily maintained, and I don't strongly recommend at this point. I've been trying to backport the fixes, but the current version for 2.4 is not recommended. The version 1.06, which is current, is in a testing tree right now, but it's expected to be included in 2.6.6. Linus is out this week, but when he gets back, I'll be asking that he pull that. And there are also many recent changes to the mount helper. Unlike SMBFS, the mount helper is tiny for SIFS. The mount helper is, you know, 700 or 800 lines of code and doesn't link in Samba client libraries. Because most of the design difference you'll see with SysVFS is that it's very heavily, most of the implementation is in kernel. Some of the things like signing required that. Now, when would you use SMBFS? Today you need to use SMBFS for contacting older servers, for contacting OS2 and Windows servers. You need SMBFS for using NetBIOS names, RFC 1000 names. Although this may be fixed. This is not a hard thing to add to the SysVFS. And the current SMBFS and SMB mount, in some cases, can use Kerberos. And it's a little bit tricky to package it that way, but if you're lucky enough to have a package with the right version of SMB mount and SMBFS, you can mount with Kerberos in some cases. And you can also get NTLM v2. That support is planned for the SysVFS, but isn't available yet. And the reason that SMBFS can get that, of course, is that it links with the Samba client libraries, which had that feature since Samba 3.0. Okay, you need to use SysVFS if you want to access newer servers, if you need better POSIX file API semantics, things like deleting open files and you know, getting the proper file mode back on operations. If you need packet signing to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks. And also the SysVFS in some cases has spectacularly better performance. I did some loopback benchmarks a few days ago, and there are cases in which the SysVFS is 500 times faster. You know, I was running IOZone, and there are a few cases in which SMBFS is faster. I think one out of about 10 IOZone cases is SMBFS is faster. Interestingly, the one case I was slower than SMBFS was file creation. I was about 5% slower on file creation until Jeremy gave me a hint. So thank you, Jeremy. So now it's about 40% faster for file creation. There's a number of really subtle things that that have gone into that, but you know, OpLock has been a big one, obviously, that's helped. SMBFS uses NetBIOS naming typically, although it can take TCP names if you're careful. SIFS only uses TCP naming, so or the IP address. And SysVFS includes locking if you need that. Includes nanosecond timestamps. And a big fundamental difference is that in the SysVFS, when you open a file, you get an open. In SMBFS, you open a file the second time, and it uses the first open. So that means that there are cases in which an application may think it's opening a file for read and is actually opening it for read-write. The improvements that I've got on the plate that I'm working, the last few weeks there's been discussions about mapping fcontrol, which will allow file directory notification. So when you go into KDE and you open a file window that shows a list of files, you automatically see that refresh. That needs a minor kernel change that looks like it's going to go in. The DFS support is only missing a very small piece right now. To be complete, both of these are likely to be complete by the summer. You can't use a home dir, at least a KDE home dir on SIS right now because of lack of support for pseudofiles. So the DCOP files, the socket files need to be created, and that that support is disabled in Samba right now. And that's one of the needs, the reasons for this, the need for SIS protocol extensions is to be able to create a pseudofile on the server requires very minor changes to Samba as well. The NTLM v2 support is in, but it's not tested, so it's disabled in the runtime configuration. SIFS has a directory, procfs-sifs, that has the runtime configuration parameters, and right now NTLM v2 is disabled and extended security is disabled, although there are some cases in which NTLM SSP will work. For example, in my home environment, I can use NTLM SSP because turning on extended security will use the raw flavor rather than the SPNego flavor that Jeremy explained yesterday. The IPv6 support is nearly complete, and if there's interest, I'll also do it over SCTP. The reference implementation for the streaming SCTP protocol, the people who manage that are in my area. It's a very interesting protocol. It's the first major protocol at that level since many years, and it's ideal for certain SIFS cases because SCTP does framing, and it's a very interesting protocol since it's already embedded within a lot of the high-end adapters that some of your servers already run. SCTP is often used in RDMA adapters, and it's a very nice performing protocol when you have hardware support. Adding SCTP support would be very easy. IPv6 support...
Steve?
Yes?
So what server changes would be needed for SCTP?
The SCTP allows you to use a standard socket API. So the difference is, you know, you have different protocol family, but it's very similar to the changes necessary to have IPv6 support. The flags are different as you create the socket, but when you read and write, it's the same. If you want to take advantage of framing, there are slight differences. And if you want to use quality of service, I believe it's sort of like fcontrols or ioctls to handle quality of service. In kernel, the API is a little different than user space, so there's a little bit more work in kernel. But there are some examples that they've made available to me, and I can talk to you about. Because I'm excited about SCTP for a couple of reasons. One of the things I thought was very odd in NFS was that when the NFS people talk about RDMA, they're talking about using a specialized adapter at a pretty high level, layered inside RPC, their RPC. I mean, it seems odd to me. The layering you described in your talk, where you layer, you know, GSS API, SPNego, NTLM SSP, Kerber, I mean, all these things within one another seem sort of odd. And to me, it seems odd that you have, you know, NFS, V4 inside RPC, inside this RDMA stuff, inside SCTP, when you could have just called SCTP directly. SCTP does framing, So, you know, you could have stuck the frame, you know, it's reliable, right? You could have just directly written to the adapters, underlying API. These are interesting things to experiment. The IPv6 is much easier, of course. And I don't know what the state of Samba 3.0's IPv6 prototyping, but it didn't look very hard to me. Does anybody know the state of Windows IPv6 support for SIFs? Has anybody experimented with that? XP? You know, Microsoft had been very heavily involved in IPv6 as IBM had. But, I was somewhat of a pessimist because one of my professors at college was in charge of, he was sort of the ambassador for IPv6 for the government for a while. And, you know, it's taken years and years and years to do. Microsoft has been adding piece by piece the IPv6 support. And apparently in Windows XP, they've now added it for SIFs. I know that it's available for, you know, the RPC layer and for a number of the individual components, but they haven't fully enabled all components. And some of them are actually quite hard to enable over IPv6. But SIFS is an example where we have so few dependencies on whether it's IP or IPv6 that it ought to have been easy. And it's sort of a, you know, it's not a big deal for us. It helps me more than it helps SMBFS because I use TCP naming preferentially. And, you know, it's a little bit easier for me to handle. And I want to do some better single sign-on integration. I don't talk about this enough, but you know, WinBind has been improving rapidly. Well, even this week, I think WinBind is one of the less well-known secrets of most Linux distributions, and it offers a number of interesting features. Among them are the ability to handle multiple backends. There are cases, though, where you know getting the Kerberos ticket from WinBind doesn't help, because you have to pass this Kerberos ticket down to the kernel services that need it, NFSv4 and SIFS. And it's a little bit tricky to do that in practice. NFSv4 does have the ability in Linux, you know, very recently to be able to handle Kerberos GSS API, but it's not clear how you handle ticket refresh, ticket expiration. You know, the client notices that the ticket's expired. How do we go tell the MIT or Heimdall libraries to do something? So obviously we can't. So you have to have a little daemon that's doing ticket refresh. So how does WinBind handle ticket refresh? How does the low-level code notify WinBind to handle ticket refresh when it gets an error indicating that? How do you handle cases where services are in a gateway environment and are passed through? There are some very subtle things that happen in NT-create for pass-through security. So what about the future? Jeremy has been a big advocate, I think, I'm misquoting you, for SIFS protocol extensions, and the Apple people seem to be as well. And we have a work group that's interested in documenting this, and we've had discussions at each of the quarterly meetings about what these extensions would look like. The idea here is that we want a SIFS client, Linux to Samba, for example, maybe Apple to Samba or other SIFS appliance vendors who get just screamingly fast performance with perfect POSIX behavior. Now, what's missing? There's half a dozen things missing. NT-create, unfortunately, doesn't return the Unix file mode. Since NT-create can't return the Unix file mode, we have to do a round trip to go look up information after the file's created. So I have to create a file and then go back and ask Samba what the file mode was for the thing I just created. Shouldn't be. I should just get back on NT-create. I have to be able to create device files that are meaningless on the server. NFS takes a very strange approach. Sometimes, you know, when you actually do links in NFS, they really do links on the server. There are cases where you don't want to do that, where you want to have client-only view of what this, it doesn't affect your server, and device nodes are the best example. There are cases you really don't want to create a device on the server and get some sort of root exposure. But you do want to let the client think he's created a device or created a socket. And there are cases like that that need minor changes. Also, I think that packet privacy is relatively easy to add. And packet privacy We can do packet signing. Packet privacy is much harder. And there are cases where that's useful, especially given that SIFS already has a flag that says, hey, this file's encrypted. Now, the motivation was that these various Linux-like clients, and the Macintosh, which has a Unix-like flavor, need to seamlessly interoperate with perfect semantics. You know, I think the SAN, one of the few advantages of SAN, I'm somewhat prejudiced here, one of the few advantages of SANs are that it's forced network file system people to not take the NFS approach where 90% is good enough. You know, when we want Unix semantics, we want Unix semantics, right? And when we want the writes to happen in more or less the order that you've sent them. We want, invalidating MMAP files to work properly. And although there are complementary solutions to this problem, right, you can install NFSv4 everywhere, even that doesn't really get you what you want. It makes it harder to manage because you still have multiple identities. And, you know, there's a very interesting talk given a few years ago. We talked about, you know, NFS access control model, the SIFS Windows-style access control model, and there's more than one, and then the POSIX model. This is awful because when you get something that's 90% the same, like the NFS version 4 and SIFS, it actually creates more mapping problems than you think. They're not quite as compatible as they look. So, you know, trying to manage access control on your home directory through two protocols is really harder than it sounds. So if you can do one protocol everywhere, there is a significant advantage. And there's no particular reason. I mean, obviously, Microsoft has had a POSIX subsystem. So many of these features that, through trial and error, I've discovered, hard links, symlinks, at least a flavor of directory symlinks, these were already in Windows. So it wasn't like these had to be added to SIFS. Many of these things were already there. There was just a few cases where the original Unix extensions were insufficient. The actual number of frames that need to be modified is only about 5. Now, we all know that the SIFS suite is not open enough. You know, IBM invented it many years ago and did a protocol document that I should have brought with me, a little green booklet at an early conference, and that was the last good documentation for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then you started to see these Microsoft documents dribbling out, and then in 1992 you finally saw a good document. And the SMB protocol was an official standard required, you know, for PC to, you know, X-Open Unix interoperability. And there it sat for 5 or 6 years, you know, more functional than NFS, but not getting revised. Then with the talk about NFS version 4 starting about 5 or 6 years ago, you see an RFC come out, an Internet Standards document, a draft come out. And it was exhaustive. It had a lot of useful information. And we used that and other things with Microsoft's help to produce the SNIA reference document that came out a few years ago. And that's been useful, but it has some errors, and it's overkill. Because for many of our clients, it's documenting, you know, 4 times as many versions of calls than we need. The SIFS is this enormous protocol. It has many levels. It's, you know, 4 different flavors of open. You know, OpenSIFS is a first step toward correcting that problem. So it's specifying the minimum subset and then some minor deltas to the Unix extensions. It has 2 modes, a legacy mode where you're talking to Windows servers or older Samba servers, and then a newer case that'll have these minor changes for servers that support this version 2 of the Linux extensions or version 2 of the Unix extensions. There's an informal draft that we've been working on in SNIA and things I need to talk with Jeremy and some other of the Samba people about. It's possible. As a matter of fact, it's what I would like to see is that the SIFS VFS, much like NFS, is the reference implementation on Linux. I'd like to see the SIFS VFS and Samba, in effect, be sort of the reference implementation for OpenSIFS. And there's no real objection to that in the SNIA that I can see. Now, the changes that have been going on have been, you know, not talked about a lot. There haven't been a lot of articles written about. But I think that what you're going to see with Linux 2.6 is finally the case where Linux to Linux, Linux to Samba, finally reaches some maturity. You're going to see a case where it's actually not bad to run a network with no Windows servers, Samba. If you have a Windows server you need in a particular part of the company, your Linux clients aren't going to have to do something very strange to get at those. I think this is going to help a lot in gateway environments. And there are very, very strange things that are showing up. I got an email a while back. A guy was trying to do backup software. Now, why would you use SIFS for backup software? He wasn't using SIFS to stream the data out, but he wanted notification, and SIFS would just happen to be the best and easiest way to get directory and file notification for him to do backups. There are lots of strange examples like this where I think that you're going to see unusual cases. Another guy sent email about multimedia serving. He was excited about this because he could get cheap Windows appliances that had his player, his thing that streamed from the satellite or whatever. But, you know, now you had a way for a Linux client to get at his, very high-speed requirements. He didn't want to use a SAN. It was too hard to configure. And this provided him a cheap way to get to his Windows, the thing that was downloading the movie content. You know, there are some really interesting examples that you can do with remote boot. I used to work on something called Workspace On Demand. Linux today, remote boots, copies a kernel down, and then typically mounts NFS. Well, you know, when you're booting your operating system, you'd like better security than NFS. Matter of fact, you might want to sign all those files as they come across. Because, you know, if you get the wrong libc, there are some security exposures there. So, you know, we're not quite there for being able to do that with the SIFS client on Linux, but it's not that far away. And, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year people have tested and, you know, written up a little how-to on how to do that. You know, basically remote boot using Linux with a SIFS client. And I think that this is very exciting. I think the other thing that's very exciting is that now that NFS version 4 maintainer, Trond, and the University of Michigan guys that I run into a lot, and I can now both gang up on the Linux VFS maintainers, we have much more likelihood of succeeding in getting the changes necessary that are holding us back. One of the big changes, you know, being able to have a domain-wide UID, the NFS guys have the same problems we have. And you're seeing now, with this sort of ganging up on the Linux kernel maintainers, that we're finally getting some really neat improvements. And obviously this is also helping Samba. You're seeing things like LSM security modules that are possible that will allow Samba in the future to do its own authorization in kernel, and some of the ACL changes have been very helpful as well. But I'm very optimistic about this, and I think this is one of the most exciting times we've had in many years. And I think this is a nice tactical step to getting where we want to get. And I'm very excited about this. Now, we have a lot of people here who are already rolling out Linux clients. And if you guys have any questions, I'd love to answer them now or afterwards. I don't know how much time we have before lunch.
But, we still have some minutes, no problem.
Okay, go ahead, Richard.
Actually, I have a question that's not about the Linux client per se, but about ACLs, POSIX ACLs, which seem to me to be just totally broken. And it's a really hard job in Samba to translate from Windows ACLs. So is anybody pushing on people to do a better ACL model?
Yeah, that's a excellent question. Obviously, asking about the better ACL model, and the irony, of course, was there was a better ACL model in some sense. AFS was slightly richer than the POSIX draft, and there was more than one POSIX draft, so there is no official POSIX ACL standard. But what you're generally seeing implemented, for example, what's implemented in the Linux kernel, is not as functional as the Windows ACL model. And, you know, I guess 2 years ago, Jeremy did a good talk on the differences between the models. My personal view is that that if inheritance were fixed, POSIX model isn't that bad. I don't think inheritance is flexible enough. And I think that there are cases where were on disk, the ACLs get a little bit large, you know, in a typical Windows environment. The current Samba approach, though, I think is adequate, right, where you have a POSIX ACL, and in the absence of a specific authorization model, the default POSIX ACL authorization module authorizes against what's there in the POSIX ACL. If you have an LSM module or some authorization module for operating systems other than Linux, you can use the augmented information that is stored in the extended attribute to authorize. But there's more problems than this. It's not so much the ACL model. There's differences in the order that authorization is done. And I think that's a more substantial problem, because those behavioral differences mean that when you set ACLs on a home directory, you have the possibility that your NFS server and your Samba server can, although it might not be a good idea, give you a different answer on whether you're allowed. And I think that's more troubling, because POSIX users have an expectation about what happens when authorization occurs, and Windows admins have a slightly different assumption. And those subtle issues, especially as they relate to the order that group entries are resolved, are hard. Now, there is a way you could approach this. You could approach it that 99% of all admins care more about their Windows ACL behavior, and we Samba are partially responsible for that. So we ought to just give up and do the Windows ACL model. This is the NFS version 4 approach, I think.
Okay, one question more.
When it comes to ACLs, one feature I always have to say no, Unix can't do this, is you want to give a project manager administrative privilege on a subdirectory of his own for without giving him root. Anybody thought about that? AFS does do this.
So the idea of giving an administrator privilege for a subdirectory without being root.
So that this project manager or whatever who is responsible can invite others and deny others access to the directory he maintains.
Right, without being root.
Yeah.
So I guess, well, Jeremy, were you going to say something?
Yes. What exactly do you mean by administrative access? Can describe the kinds of operations that you mean?
Yeah, having somebody come into his team,
yeah.
He needs access to this file.
Yeah.
Somebody leave the team, okay, deny access to that file.
And in what way won't POSIX ACLs do that?
Because only owner and root can set the ACL.
Oh, so in other words, you're saying it's not the owner of the files.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Right.
I mean, you can do that in an LSM module. You could invent take ownership permission or invent an ACL change permission bit, but you certainly can't do it with the current authorization. And, you know, I'm appalled, coming from an OS2 background, when I look at, you know, how much of the 777 permissions like this, you know, that heritage that we have to live with, but there's nothing we can do about it in some sense without having... Go ahead.
It's really exactly the same problem as the DOS file times problem. You can't set the date on a file that you either don't own, that you don't own unless you root. And we already have a solution for that in Samba, where we have DOS file times equals yes, no as an smb.conf option. And the way that option works is that if that option is set, and if setting a file time fails, then Samba checks whether a Windows system would have allowed it, and if it would have, then Samba temporarily gains root privileges, does the operation on behalf of the user, then loses the root privileges again, so on that single operation. So what we need is a equivalent option, but for setting of ACLs. So a... setting the option on globally should be perfectly fine. It doesn't... I'm not saying that setting this option will allow anyone to edit any ACL. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that if the user tries to set an ACL, Samba will first try and set it as the user. If that fails with a permission denied error from the operating system, then Samba will do its own authorization check as to whether the current ACL allows write access on that object. If that is allowed, then Samba would use its root privileges to override the operating system for that operation. So Samba is able to, we've already got that in a number of places, and it gives the behavior the same as a Windows server. The only problem with it is there is an inherent race condition. Because we are doing this in user space, we cannot avoid the race condition without help from the operating system. But that's just something you have to live with. And I think it isn't possible to create a SIFS file server on a POSIX system that is completely raceless. It's just a matter of choosing which races you can live with. And so that is a race that I think we have to live with. It's a very simple option to code up. So it's a matter of putting in the equivalent of the DOS file times code, but for ACLs. We might even instead have somebody came up with a good name, have an option that includes both the DOS file times and POSIX ACL, one that generally says to Samba that you are allowed to override operating system permissions in the interests of compatibility. Because by default, Samba refuses to override the operating system's authorization decisions and access decisions. So I think that having a general option that says that Samba is allowed to override, then setting that one option for all those different cases would make a lot of sense.
You know, I'm a big fan of doing some of this with Linux security modules because they're easy to write, but I think that Tridge is absolutely correct. Within Samba, we can solve this problem. My worry, though, is that in the interesting environments that I'm seeing, you're running both NFS version 4 and Samba on the same system, and Samba is sometimes execing code that may end up touching files in that directory.
Do you know some companies who have implemented LSM modules for in-house security?
Well, SE Linux, which...
Except right, SE so, Linux. I mean, something
yeah,
different.
I mean, SE Linux was donated into the kernel by IBM. Not SE Linux itself, but the infrastructure it needed. And the company that did that, some of the work there, worked with the U.S. government, NSA, the National Security Agency, and obviously sells these things. Actually, I think I have seen a company that was doing them, but they're so small that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you wouldn't notice them. You know, you can write one in a few hundred lines of code. And that's the kind of thing that I would expect to see, you know, some of the gateway and NAS vendors to start shipping as 2.6 gets more popular.
I remember Ericsson to have yeah. implemented a distributed security framework on top of Linux security modules.
Yeah.
Okay, but we have to finish now. Let's thank Steve for his insight. And see you at 1 o'clock.